Hi, everyone, and welcome to the DevMar Debugged podcast, where experts from top companies all over the world share their insights on everything developer marketing.
Building a successful developer marketing strategy doesn't happen in a bubble. For over 12 years, the experts at Catchy have helped technology companies build, grow, and manage developer marketing programs. We can help you figure out what to do based on market research and audience intelligence, then bring that vision to life. Whether you're building a developer marketing program from scratch or adjusting an existing strategy, Catchy can help you do what it takes to reach your goals. Don't be a stranger. Get in touch with us at catchyagency.com.
Hi, Adam. Thanks for joining me today. So in this episode, we're going to discuss the idea that developer marketing does not exist, which is also the amazing title of your book. But before we get into it, I thought you could tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Yeah, so I have a developer background, and that was how I got into the industry. And even back when I was a developer, I was always more interested in what was possible with the technology itself. So less about, you know, I would go to meetups and it would be all about a particular programming language or something. And I was interested in that, but I was a lot more interested in like, what are we going to do with that yeah. programming language afterwards, which is kind of like it was almost destined that I was going to end up where I am. And along the way, I was a journalist. So that was sort of how I turned that, like, what's possible, use that what's possible muscle. I wrote for Wired and then was the first editor of Programmable Web, which was a directory of APIs. And that's what got me kind of into the API space. And and so then I call myself an accidental marketer because I kind of fell into roles where that was the natural place in the organization. Worked at SendGrid, worked at Zapier, working always on technical products and how to reach a technical audience. And so it was kind of natural then that I would lead into working at every developer where I am now.
Yes, it seems like it was like completely varied, like completely different from what you started out doing. And yeah, so a lot of people seem to fall into the marketing area kind of in one accident. Yeah, so how was that transition between, you know, developer to marketer? Like, what made you, you know, do the switch?
It was reading press releases every day at Programmable Web was the biggest thing, and kind of feeling like I needed to do the work to figure out what the story was there, which, you know, maybe it was my job as a journalist, but I felt like these companies should be doing some of that work for us. They should be telling us, why does this API that's been released actually matter? Like, what are the things that you want to do with it? And so it was continuing to see that there was a need for that kind of technical eye within these technical companies to be able to connect those dots. And so that's what led to me starting Every Developer, which we're a consultancy. We help companies with technical products to reach the right audience, primarily with content. So blog posts and tutorials, documentation, educational guides, kind of runs the gamut. Some of that maybe you wouldn't even consider marketing, though, for a company that wants to reach a technical audience. Those docs are, you know, one of the things that really matter. And so it was realizing that there was that need that led to me getting in it and, you know, doing it on the front lines at companies like SendGrid, and then realizing that there was an approach that where I could reach more companies. And that's what led to Every Developer.
Yeah. And that is super interesting, especially, I guess, because a lot of people say that, you know, traditional marketing doesn't work with developers. So I guess that's kind of like the mindset that kind of led you to kind of specialize in this sort of area. And
yeah. Yeah, and I mean, certainly is, you know, the title of the book references that, right? So yeah. So developer marketing does not exist. I gave that as a talk shortly before starting Every Developer, when I was still at Zapier, and had said versions of that in in various talks, kind of making, like, the cover of the book makes reference to the Matrix, and there's a story in the book about the Matrix and the spoon specifically, yeah. And making that same sort of claim about developer marketing. And so it was interesting then that having already given that talk, that it was more than a year, 2 years into running the company that I wrote the book.
Yeah. So in your opinion, like, why are developers so different than as an audience?
Yeah. So, I mean, in some ways, I've had many people say that what I talk about in developer marketing does not exist is actually something that would work on any audience, that being able to educate any audience will make them a better audience and makes for better marketing when you're doing that. I think there are a few things with developers that do make them a little bit different. First of all, their job is to spot edge cases. They're supposed to be able to avoid errors, right? And so part of that is to naturally be skeptical. It's to say, okay, what could go wrong here? And so I think they bring that same lens to any marketing that comes to them, where they say, okay, what this doesn't, something smells fishy here. What's the, you know, right? So that's, yeah. That kind of approach is part of their job. And so they're naturally good at that. I think there's then a second side of that where they've been burned by false promises in the past. So, so they've seen marketing that, yeah, makes big claims that can't possibly fulfill those promises.
Yeah.
And so then that just sort of makes that skepticism that much greater. So not only are they naturally skeptical, yeah, but they've been skeptical and burned before, which makes them, even for great marketing messages, makes them uncertain about it. And one of those, so I at Zapier, I wrote a guide on authentication and great authentication practices.
Yeah.
And it was a big 2,000 word post. It was all about, you know, here are the ways, if you have an app, here are the things you should think about for authentication, and walked through it and mentioned Zapier in, I think, three places in this whole post. And it was on Zapier's engineering blog, but still someone tweeted and said, this is a genius post other than the marketing spiel.
Right.
And I was like, what market? Like, sent me back to my own blog post. Oh, well, I mean, I said that they should use the platform if they have our platform, if they have a SaaS app. But I was like, wait, at the bottom of this So yeah. even when you try your hardest and really do try to do this educational content, right, you might have some of that skepticism. There, developers are a tough audience, and they'll show you that again and again,
yeah,
even when your motives are, you know, to truly help them.
Right, and that kind of leads me to think that it's complicated. We were talking about content, that it's kind of, you know, we all know, you know, content is king and all that, sure, but it kind of makes me think even something, you know, as innocuous as a blog post, as you just said, could, you know, be interpreted in a different way. So we know good content is important, but how would you go about then creating that content, or what would you focus on when you created that content so that you can actually, you know, appeal to developers instead of like...
Yeah, yeah, and I alluded to it a little bit in my example there of that authentication post. And it's really the whole approach of the book. Also, the philosophy is education, not promotion. And so how can you find those topics where you can educate the audience? Because for developers, I mean, if you think about open source and, you know, developer resources that aren't tied to a product, like, it really, like, knowledge transfer is kind of the currency of developers. And so being able to be part of that is how you get the attention in the first place. And build up the trust to be able to have the opportunity to welcome them into your technical product to try it and to, you know, hopefully buy it.
Yeah, and that trust itself as well is quite hard to build. No, I mean, everyone says as well, you know, that developers trust their peers and the opinions of, you know, people like that, like them in a way, you know, like have walked the walk and all that. So does it take, I guess it will take time, you know, how do you build that trust?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's why I think content is a great way, great way to do it, because it's out there and is able to educate, you know, while without having to be face to face with every developer, right? So being able to put those lessons into content that they will find on their own. So that typically means through search traffic. So what are the things that developers are already searching for and thinking about? Mm. How can we have them find the stuff that will help them with those from us? Let us help them. So that will begin to build that trust that, right. If you walk through a technical problem in some content and you're able to show a developer some of those edge cases, right. It's not all super easy. Then they'll say, okay, these people understand this problem. And so it's worth them investing their time in.
Yeah.
Figuring out whether the tool that they have that also addresses this problem is something that can be used in that developer's job.
Yeah, because there will be so many out there, isn't it? So it's kind of like getting that attention and keeping it there, I'm guessing, you know. Language, straightforward, you know, no fluff, is stuff that they don't particularly enjoy, is it?
Making sure that the language is direct, is that what you're saying?
Yeah. So straight to the point. Yeah. No faffing about, that sort of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, it can be. This is an issue. This is one where I have disagreed some with some devs. So if you talk to a dev, they will absolutely tell you, just give me the facts, right? Just give me the docs. I'll figure it out. What they're really saying is they don't trust what else you'll say beyond those, right? Yeah. Doesn't mean that they don't need to have a little bit of context. So I believe any piece of content outside of a true reference material that is supposed to be just kind of here are the pieces of this technology. Anything else, I think, needs some context with it.
Yeah.
And so some might see that as fluff. And you have to find that spot in between where it's not and where it's not going to be seen as marketing spiel. But being able to connect technology to a real world problem, even if that real world is a developer problem.
Yeah.
But being able to make that connection is an important piece of that. So I, on the surface, I would agree that developers, you know, they don't want sort of definitely like the hand wavy kind of, oh, this is so easy, a caveman can do it kind of Geico commercial is not the approach to devs, because they'll say, okay, you're hand waving over some stuff that might page me in the middle of the night, right? So but you do need some amount of context there, I think, to connect it to those real world problems that, you know, at the top I talked about were more interesting to me as a dev than the technology itself.
Yeah, and it kind of also helps that what you're saying, you know, kind of them connecting to people and not just, oh, here's a company trying to, you know, some bullet points. And so if you that kind of language and talking to them like that also helps to for them to realize, you know, there's a person here, you know, talking to a faceless company just trying to sell a product.
Yep.
So it's all about sort of like providing the best, you know, developer experience, which is something you also, you know, have a chapter in your book called developer experience. So would you be able to kind of talk a little bit about this concept? How can you know, what does it mean really? How can marketers sort of like provide that best experience to developers?
You mentioned there's a chapter in the book. It's other than the introduction, the first chapter in the book. And the reason for that is I really do believe it's foundational. And in our work with clients, it's the first thing we look at is what, if we're going to attract a bunch of developers, technical audience to your products, what are they going to find? And certainly DevRel, who might be listening to this, understand it's hard to be DevRel for a product with a lot of problems, right? So understanding what some of those problems are is an important first step, because sometimes there's ways to be able to avoid those or give a heads up. And in some cases you need to go and fix pieces of the product. But usually when we look at developer experience, there are some big things that are fairly easy. They're not sort of at the product level kind of things that can be solved, so that anyone marketing DevRel can step in on. And so a big one is, what is that first experience like? So they've heard of you somewhere. So somewhere they had a first impression, they maybe read some of your content. But when they make that decision to kind of check out the actual product, of which I think the documentation is an extension of the product. So when they do that, what sort of effort have you taken to guide them through that? And so some would call this the time to hello world. It is not the only metric to look for, but it is an important one. So I believe that you can have this, that this journey is much longer than to hello world, and that you actually, so this first experience is what we're talking about. There's a first success that you hope that they have, but that does not have to be the hello world moment. So the hello world moment and the actual success are two different moments, but you can't get to that success without going through the first. And so having an opinionated single path, if possible, at what you want someone to do in their first time with your product is something you can orchestrate within the documentation, usually often within the onboarding of the product also, but that's more product work and harder for a marketer or DevRel to be able to kind of dive in and provide that. But in the docs, having a clear go here to get started is one of the things that still we see in most cases is not there. And so making sure that's there, making sure you don't have two or three of those. That's a common mistake that we see, is that there are lots of different getting started and they're like just a little bit different, and you get at them from different spots and maybe different teams own them. But like, to a developer having their first experience, they don't need, like, it doesn't matter that you have these different teams that are competing. You need to kind of have this cohesive, singular approach. So that's one of the ones. And then I alluded to it a little bit with first success, having a next step after that. So what is the next thing that someone does after they have reached that hello world first experience moment? And that goes to use cases. And so that's another thing that within your developer experience that's very important, is being able to think, how will someone actually use this, and how can we point them to those use cases? Sample apps might be another name for it, right? How can we point them to those after they've had that first experience? And so there are others, and there's 13 elements that we go through in the reviews that we do, and all of those are in the book. Like, those 13 is the subheadings within that chapter. It's the longest chapter. Maybe not the right move to make the first chapter be the longest chapter, but like I said, it's foundational, so it holds up all of the rest of the chapters. And and it's an important aspect, making sure that you understand what experience you're attracting developers into.
Yeah, and having it like that, just as you say, might not be the best idea. I think probably would be, because then, you know, people are searching for that. People might not know exactly how to go about it. So just having those sort of like steps there to, you know, from someone who's done it before, it's just so important.
Yeah.
So yeah, definitely. And for people who are, you know, just new to that, who don't really know, you know, okay, so I have this piece of documentation and stuff, so what do I do with it? So where would you share it, or how do you go and try to, you know, get this in the hands of the people that need to read it? And
yeah, that's an important distinction too, that that we make between content that will attract and content that's meant for someone after you've attracted them. Marketers might think of it as stages of the funnel. But most documentation is not going to attract developers with that first impression, unless it is very use case focused. So most of the time, once someone finds your documentation, that's where you kind of get to talk about your product. Whereas with the stuff that attracts developers, that's where you don't want to be talking about your product. That's we talk about problems, not product. So you have problem content, which is more your marketing top of funnel, though it could be, if it's speaking to a problem that's lower, it could be lower in the funnel, but it's still not about the product, right? It's about that problem.
Yeah.
And then the documentation is more likely to be about the product, or have a product lens to it, though sometimes you still, like in use cases, you want to be speaking to the problem. And there are types of content that can bridge those. So I've seen Twilio has some like use case type of content within their documentation for tutorials. So they have a send an SMS, a very product focused tutorial, but then they also have a send appointment reminders tutorial, which is a use case within SMSs, right? So that's you're a doctor's office or something, and you want to send an appointment reminder via SMS. So they have a tutorial in their documentation that is focused on appointment reminders. I have never looked at Twilio's analytics, but I would guess that that does well at attracting people also. So it is possible, but don't make that expectation of your documentation that it will be an attractor. It should be the thing that they find after you've attracted them with, definitely content in the work we do, but they're, you know, all the ways that marketers would attract that technical audience. And so don't expect your docs to do that kind of work.
Yeah.
But if you have a sort of a technical blog post, what do you do to get attention to it? Certainly being able to share it out on channels that you use, encourage the right developers within your community to, I mean, really, you could ask them to share, but even just to check it out is also if it's truly useful content, then those that have already found you will say, "Whoa, this is really useful," and you can do some kind of republication ideas to be able to get audience in different places. But I mean, really, if you want content to be evergreen, you should think about what are the search terms that are going to attract someone to it. And so thinking about, and if you've written something that really does, it's about a problem that developers are having, then developers are going to be searching for those problems. And there are tools you can use to confirm that that people are searching for those.
Yeah.
And then making sure you write to the terms, but in a way that is authentic to the developers. So you really still want to start with that true problem, not kind of the keyword stuffing SEO approach. But that's going to be the longest term evergreen way to be able to attract developers. I on every developer, I have a post about vanity metrics and how, yes, you can be, it's awesome to be on the front page of Hacker News or yeah. Reddit. I've been there. It's great. It feels wonderful that day. But it's a spike that, you have to keep doing that if you want to maintain that. Right. And also those people that see you that one day or two, if you're lucky, right, they aren't likely to stick around, right? Maybe you capture a couple of them, but not nearly what you could do if you had consistently 100 a month coming to, right? So it sounds like a small number, but in developer products, small numbers actually make a big difference, right? Yeah. If you have 100 of the right audience coming to a blog post, that can work for a technical company. Whereas if it was direct to consumer, I mean, you need the sort of Hacker News and higher traffic, right? To make it work.
Yeah, no, I could see that. And with the smaller numbers as well, I guess it would be the difference between, you know, number of visitors, sure, but then engaged audience is completely different. So you have a small amount of people who are very invested in that and the product and all that. And then obviously the rest are just open it, and then just skip off, go somewhere else. Yeah. So it's just kind of interesting. You say, you know, search is probably the best way of going about it. And I was kind of thinking of, you know, the difference with paid. Is it something that actually makes a difference with developers? Is it something that they ignore or?
In some cases, I really focus on content and organic because that can have really great results with developers. There's an advertising chapter in the book, though. So I believe the same approach can work no matter the channel. Yeah, and so, yes, I believe that paid can work. Whether they ignore it, I mean, so many devs are going to have ad blockers on, and so they might not even see your ad. Recognizing that's going to self-select who actually sees your ad and comes from your ad. I think so. The chapter is called Advertising and Sponsorships, and I think that you can get a much better and engaged audience from that second type, the sponsorships. Yeah. So that said, I'm not an ads marketer, right? I'm the accidental marketer that came very much from the content side. And so I believe that someone who really knows that area could use really helpful educational content to be able to use ads. And I've seen that come through. Launch Darkly comes to mind. I show an example in talks sometimes of an ad from Launch Darkly, and then I go and it is not about Launch Darkly, even though they've paid for the for my attention in that case, but they are using that attention to educate me on a topic, on, you know, experimentation or feature flags, stuff that is very related to Launch Darkly's product, but they're not saying, and here's how you do that in Launch Darkly.
Yeah. I'd say then it's kind of like trying different things and seeing what works as well, because different products, different companies, different audiences, you know, we talk about developers, but they're also so varied. So not just like one big group. And so I guess it will be for a company to kind of obviously research their audience, you know, as you were saying, figure out the problems they're facing and kind of like tailor their marketing and messaging to that. Specifically,
anyone could try ads or events or even content, and if done in that product first way that isn't going to resonate with developers, they might say, oh, this doesn't work. So if you've tried ads and you've sent them directly to your sign up page, I can tell you right now that's probably not going to work. Or if it does, it's maybe not the audience that that you really want to.
That might be the exception, not the rule. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. In your opinion, what is the main takeaway of your book that you believe that people should, you know the main lesson?
Yeah, this goes back to when I started Every Developer and why I wrote it in the first place. So I was explaining why I was starting Every Developer to a friend, and about how there are too many examples of companies that aren't reaching developers in this authentic way out there, and I want to help them be able to do it, you know. And I've had developers thank me for this book. They're like, I want everyone to be able to you know, create their content the way that you talk about, because they know that then they'll be treated in the way that they want, right? And so, yeah. And that friend said, oh, you need a manifesto. And I kind of like shrugged that off at the time. And then I wrote the book, and I texted him pretty much when I finished it. I said, I think I just wrote that manifesto that you told me about a couple of years, that you said I should do a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
I didn't title it that, but in some ways the title is kind of, I mean, it's very much says the philosophy. So when developer marketing does not exist because marketing done right to developers won't look like marketing. So it, to them, it won't exist. And so the philosophy of the book and my philosophy and the one that I have seen over 10 plus years work with devs is to be educational, to share the education, not focus on the product, and know that when you do, you'll build that trust. And even in the cases like advertising, where you're, you know, paying a lot of money for the privilege of someone's attention, this philosophy works. It can attract them first to your message and eventually to your product.
Yeah. So kind of like a very important lesson there. And yeah, thank you so much for all this, talking to me about what I think is very important for developer marketers. Because again, I do think that, you know, developer marketing is a name, but all in all, it's just marketing, isn't it? So just kind of as well, just focusing on the audience and adding value and what can we do for them, really. And
yeah
that's so right.
yeah
thank you again for this and for amazing insights and tips, and yeah, great speaking
thank
to
you. Yeah, great to be part of it.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of DevMar Debugged. If you want to hear more from professionals in the developer marketing world, subscribe to our podcast for more expert talks. See you on the next one.